Hi, and welcome to Why I Teach. My name is Jesus Huerta. I'm here with my brother Adam in his brand new house.
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
So, Adam, this new house, how do you like it?
Love it. That's it.
Okay, cool. So, we're actually recording this house, so he says that we're going to do this here from now on, so hopefully it'll sound better, because we're kind of doing it like in my garage, and you could hear dogs and cars passing by, so hopefully there'll be less of that. Okay, so Adam, have you been reading anything? We said we're going to start reading more.
No, not at all. I've been too busy with school and moving and whatnot. And I still listen to my podcasts that I normally listen to. But as far as reading, nope. No time. How about you?
I told my students I was going to start reading books from like our classroom library. So I'm reading The Red Pyramid. It's from Rick Riordan. He does Percy Jackson books. Mm-hmm. And he has a series that's based on Egyptian mythology. I'm like 30 pages in. It's pretty good. I haven't read a book that's like way, you know, for like a younger audience like that in a long time. I know he has some on I think it's Norse mythology. Those are like the brand new books that he's doing right now.
Okay.
So it's kind of like something I wanted to try to kind of like encourage my students to read some more. And then I've been reading like a few like educational books, trying to, you know, squeeze that in. But right now that we're back into, you know, into the thick of everything, it's hard because, I mean, you got to plan, grade. We just had our grades go out for progress reports. So It's hard to find the time, but I'm trying, you know, at least to push myself to get a little bit more reading out of the way. So, movies, TV, anything you've seen lately that you're...
No, nothing that stands out.
Wait, have you watched The Flash?
The second season? No, I just...
Because there is a third season.
Good to know. I mean, I don't have time to read, which is one of my goals, so...
And you don't have time for TV either.
I'll Netflix something here and there to like... for my downtime, but yeah, as far as going deep on a series, no, not since Westworld. I saw Westworld, that was amazing.
Have you noticed that there's like too much stuff right now to watch? Like, I can name like 5 shows I've heard of, and I haven't even like touched an episode, and I'm like, I heard this is good and that's good.
Yeah, oh, I've heard of plenty. Stranger Things is one of them
that's awesome.
Out.
I saw that.
I've never seen it, and I heard that's really... And all of the course, like The Flash and a lot other related ones.
Have you heard of... what's that one with Billy Bob Thornton on Amazon?
No.
It's like a giant word. I can't remember what it's called. Not Colossus. What's it called?
Leviathan?
Is it Leviathan?
I don't know.
Tell you right now. That, I heard, is good. You have HBO Go, right?
Yes.
Have you watched Veep?
No.
That one is good. Let me see. What's that one called? This is going to kill me if I don't figure it out. Hold on.
Okay, it's right here. A Hunter Killed Goliath?
Yeah. There you go, Goliath. There it is.
Okay.
That's supposed to be good. I want to watch that. I haven't seen it. The Man in the High Castle.
No.
I heard that one's good. Have no, you heard
Jackie
of that one?
Jackie met the cast of that
oh, when show. You guys went to Comic-Con?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Are you guys going to go this year?
No. Okay. I mean, a new house. You know, I mean, somebody says we are, but if you listen to this podcast, she'll learn that new. We probably are not going to be going.
So, we watched. We've been watching like Supergirl, The Flash, like those, because there's like a crossover one. And we missed a few episodes because we don't have time. Kimberly's like, I'm caught up, but you know, she's on break right now from school, so. She has all the time in the world, so.
What about podcasts? Do you listen to any podcasts?
You know what? I have definitely some recommendations. I just remember.
Really?
There's one called, did I tell you about it? Based on a True Story?
No, you haven't told me about
okay.
that.
Okay, that one is awesome. So he goes and he does those movies like based on actual events. Like The Big Short is the new episode that he has.
Right.
But he does a lot of research, and like he'll mention like key parts from the movie,
mm-hmm.
And he'll say, well, that didn't happen exactly like that. Or that person didn't even exist. It was just added for the movie.
Or this one's three characters bowled into one, right?
Yeah. You know which one is awesome that I definitely recommend is A Beautiful Mind.
Okay. And what was the name of that podcast again?
Based on a True Story.
Okay.
That one... There's a lot of stuff that, you know, gets changed. That's why I guess they say based, on a true story.
Right, but like, a lot of times it's loosely based. Yeah.
Very loosely based, some of them. Uh-huh. But that one is, and you know what? I'm trying to just listen to the episodes of movies I've watched.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that one because, I mean, I've seen the movie a bunch of times because I like that one, especially because, I mean, it deals a lot with, like mental health and all that.
Right.
You know, and here it is, Dan Lefebvre. I hope I didn't mess up the name. He's at, on Twitter, he's at Dan Lefebvre. He also loves video games, so he followed me and he retweeted some of the stuff that we're doing in the classroom.
Cool.
Some of his other episodes, which are the other ones I listened to? That one was good. I started listening to the one on The Pianist. But then I was like, no, I don't want to ruin it because I haven't even seen that movie. So
you have not seen that movie?
Yeah, and it was one of my...
Listen, that is one of those movies. There's only a couple of movies where if I'm flipping through the channel, no matter what is going on, and I pass that movie, I have to stop and finish it, whether it's at the beginning or
yeah, at the middle, at the it's end. One of my crimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially since I love movies, you know. Yeah, but it's just, I know how good it is, so I don't want to watch it in pieces. And I don't want to watch it with, you know, Chito running around, hey, let's go play or whatever. Like, I want to just sit down and watch it.
Okay.
He did one on The Conjuring and kind of, like, explained how, you know, they're saying, like, it's based on a, you know, true story or actual events, but it's, like, there's no evidence to back up the actual events.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. I mean, the Black Dahlia one, that one was awesome. There's a lot of fake people in that one.
Okay.
So, I mean, and there's a lot of movies here that I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. Like, Pawn Sacrifice, he has one on that. Social Network, I've seen that movie. Ali.
Uh-huh.
Zodiac. Oh, I never saw the movie Zodiac, but I know about the Zodiac Killer. So.
Right.
That one, he goes into a lot of information. And some of the theories about who the Zodiac Killer really was.
Right.
Other crimes that they might have been connected to.
He was never caught, right?
Never caught.
Turn yourself in, dude.
I know, it's me. You know, I travel through time. Besides that, I'm listening to a video game one called the Jimquisition podcast. It's this guy that does videos on YouTube. And he talks about video games, but he's... pretty funny. He's this British guy, so
okay.
So there's that. Besides that, I mean, I'm just, you know, listen to music or, you know, those. Oh, and Up and Vanished, dude. That one's awesome.
What's that about? What's that
this
about?
Guy
true
that
crime or what?
It's a true crime. He's investigating. Like he was gonna do documentary, and so he's like, well, I'll start like a podcast first. And he started investigating this disappearance of this school teacher. And there's all these little like things that he's found that it points to certain people. I mean, I don't want to give it away, but it's like, oh, it's too convenient, you know? Mm-hmm. What a coincidence. And I mean, it's not even like that. It's all slickly edited. I mean, it's edited well. It's just, you know,
the content is what
he's not a detective. He's just a guy that does documentary films, and he went into this project like, well, I'm just gonna, you know, he's out. He said he was only gonna do like. Five episodes and then he would stop, and now he's like, I don't know if I can stop because I need to figure out what happened.
It's kind of like the first season of Serial, whatever.
Yeah,
it just catches you, and
I think
they
I like
stumble onto something that's just so deep and complex.
I think I like this one better than Serial.
Really?
Yeah, okay. It's pretty good.
Well, I'm listening to, I just listen to a couple consistently, and usually it's like when I'm walking the dog or doing cleaning up around the house or putting stuff away, stuff where I like to listen to stuff while I'm working on stuff. I listen to a true crime show called My Favorite Murder, and it's kind of like, it's funny because it's like a comedy podcast, but it's about serial murders. So it's good, it's entertaining, and it's not too
heavy.
Yeah, it's funny, and it's, if you can make serial murder light, they do that. And then The Fighter and the Kid, I listen to it because it's just funny, I think. They don't take themselves seriously at all. The one of the new ones that I really like is Reasonable Doubt, and that's Adam Carolla and Mark Garagos, and it's once a week, but it's usually topics that are like legal topics and current events and whatnot. They usually have a different take than what I usually do or how I think of things, and I like to kind of see those different points of view. And then the one that I still haven't got to, because I mean you have to put like 3 or 5 hours away to listen to it, is the Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. He just put a new one out, The Destroyer of Worlds, which I need like a Saturday where I probably when I'm doing my backyard.
Is that the one that's about the atomic bomb?
Yes, it's about it's,
oh, what's that quote? I am death. Or I become death.
I've become death. Yeah. The Destroyer World or something like that.
Yeah. I've listened to his. Did you ever listen to the Genghis Khan one?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, there's like 5 parts, yeah, and each one's like 10 hours. Yeah. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but.
And I think it's not enough. I mean, the way he portrays history and the way he explains things and just the way he reads, you know, quotes and whatnot. Just the passion he has for it really is. Something that gets you, you know, involved in the podcast.
And I think that's, you know, you said I need time. It's not dense because the way he explains things and how he flows. I mean, you can tell he took his time. He knows, you know, exactly what he's talking about. And you're just like, because me, when I listen to it, I mean, I have to have time, you know, I have to have. And that's when I worked at the base and I had time, you know. Right. Now, I mean, maybe on my drives, that's why I listen to stuff that's like half an hour that I can listen to over, you know, a drive, but his, it's like, it's a big commitment, but it's really good. Yeah. It's a big commitment.
It's a commitment to listen to that podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it gets you hooked. And I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you know, you go an hour and in, you're like, well, there's 2 more hours and I want to finish this off. So, okay. So right now,
that's what I'm up to right now. And, I think we left off last time. Do you want to go to my tech update first, or did you want to go to run over some other things first?
All right, well, let's go into your tech update. All right, Adam, let's talk about your tech update. So what do you got that's new?
Well, I told you last time that I kind of realized that what my role was, it was actually a little bit different than, you know, just, you know, tinkering with technology. And I think that what my role is, or it's changed, or realized that it's become, is the classroom where I think the district or my school site, where they want to go in the future, which is a classroom where you have access to computers on a consistent, regular basis. So that's what what I've been trying to do, is implement the Chromebooks that I have in my classroom, and trying to figure out what the kinks are and the any of the things that are affect implementing those the programs that we're using and the technology in the classroom fully. So some of the issues that I've run into. So for example. When we had the Chromebooks, when we were all using them, we have several Chromebook cards in the on site. And when everybody would be, especially when we were like typing essays or they were doing research papers near the end of the quarter, near the end of the semester, it seems like that we would have issues with connectivity. That's one thing we found out through my classroom, because during those times, the Wi-Fi, the access point, something was not jiving well, and it would kick students out, or would take a long time for them to access the Wi-Fi, which is supposed to be dedicated for those Chromebooks. So that we found out a way to, actually it was our tech department who came up with a way to solve that, either manipulating the access point in my classroom, and I'm not sure exactly what they did, and they solved that issue. Another issue we ran into was the Wi-Fi not connecting instantly or in a timely manner from the Chromebooks. And then we figured out that students who were become impatient were adding different the public Wi-Fi, the student Wi-Fi onto the Chromebooks, and you'd have to go in there and go into the settings to the preferred network and choose the dedicated one, the school provided Chromebook Direct network. So that once we started to figure stuff like that out, then we actually could use them. So I've had, I'm in a blessed spot where I have the Chromebooks anytime I want to use them. I use them almost daily for typing, for research, for access to our new curriculum, the Pearson curriculum. So those were some of the issues that we ran into and how we overcame that.
So have they mentioned, like, do they want to go one-to-one? Like, there's going to be, you know, a Chromebook available per student, like one per student?
What they've mentioned is they're on a plan where every year they'll increase the number of teacher Chrome cards, I guess you would call them. Every year they want to add, at least, well, I'll be honest with you,
how many Chrome cards do you guys have right now? Do you know?
School-wide, I don't know. I think our English department, I think we have about 6.
How many teachers do you have? Let me start with that. Like around
20 English teachers. We have like 100 on site.
Okay, so like 100 on site.
Yeah, like 100 on site.
Probably 20 English.
Uh-huh. And so we as far as cows, I think there might be 10 or 12.
Cows, you mean like the Chrome cards, right?
Yeah, the Chrome cards. Cows, computers on wheels. No, yeah, okay. So it's like
a little... There's about how many?
I think there's about 10 or 12. If I could be mistaken, but I'm okay. It's not anywhere near where we need. But with our new principal and the funding, the way they wrote it into, I think it's called the LCAP, they have a plan where they're going to be adding more and more of these Chrome cards or some other type of technology into the classroom yearly. In addition to having a better cycle, I know that one of the issues they also came up was, you know, teacher computers and our student computers, the student computers that were in the classroom, you know, not the Chrome carts, but like the regular student computers that we would have one or two in each class in addition to the teacher computer. I mean, those things were so old. I mean, you would ask having come update and they'd say, you know what, you'd have better luck just, you know, tossing it in the toilet because they're just so old. And I know some teachers have computers that are very slow and difficult. So I know they updated that plan to make it to where every computer would be, every teacher computer would be replaced on a more timely manner. So that is the plan, that they do want to implement more and more, because the curriculum that we bought for specifically for our English department has a very broad and comprehensive online, you know, a digital component, and we really don't have access to that. It really makes no sense having that if you don't have consistent access to computers in your classroom daily. So I'm trying to tap into that. I've been using it more. I've assigned my first test on that platform, the Pearson platform. Had a couple of issues that we worked out with students, either forgetting their passwords or the pages taking too long to refresh, little things like that, but we've worked out the kinks. My first assignment also already did on Pearson, and then what we're gonna do next this coming week that I plan to do is they're gonna be typing their first formal essay on the Pearson website. But actually, the way I planned it is it's a little different. Pearson also has a plagiarism checker, but we also have Turnitin.com. But the uploading to Pearson is a little difficult. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have them type.
Like, it's not user friendly.
It's not user friendly. No, you have to save it all into one file and then upload that file and whatnot. So what we have Turnitin.com right now. So what I'll do is, like I normally do, have them students type it on Google Doc. They have student issued Google accounts already, and then they'll submit it to Turnitin, and then very easily they can just copy and paste it into the Pearson website, which what I'm going to try out is it has a feature that grades the essays according to a rubric. So I'm going to see how that works. I'll have it graded, and then I'll look through the essays myself and kind of see if I agree with the grading, or if I think, you know, that has issues, or maybe if it's reliable or not. But I'll try and give you know, the other teachers, you know, my feedback on how that experiment went and how that, you know, if it's worth it or not. So those are just some of the things that I'm doing. I did use my Apple TV already a couple of times. I used the one that you told me, the app. They explain everything out.
Hey, yeah, when we talked today, you told me.
Yeah, and it went really well, and the students were kind of like, whoa, what's this? What's
There's going? A trick I need to show you with that. Uh-huh. Like, we will do, like, other things, and I have it up there on, mm-hmm. on there, like, see, I'm doing a Kahoot. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a quiz show type, like, game. They play it on their tablets. Uh-huh. It's very competitive, pushes them to, you know, not share answers uh-huh. because they want to be number one.
Right.
So say you're holding it horizontal, your uh-huh. iPad kind of like this, uh-huh. you know, sideways. With your Pro, because you have the Pro, I don't know if the other ones will do it. If you grab from here and pull this way,
right,
uh-huh. explain everything will be there and the kids will see it. So say I have a math problem and, you know, I see like 10 out of my 32 students got it. Uh-huh. Well, let me take a second and kind of show them, you know, this is where some of you might have made a mistake. Or, okay, let me go through here and let me work the problem out for you. You can see it. And then I just go, whoop, like that, push it out of the way, and Kahoot is still running. It's an awesome feature. So, say you want to show, like, a presentation or a video.
Uh-huh.
And you pause it, and you want to, like, explain a couple things. You can kind of, like,
pull that out. Explain everything.
And I mean, down here, it's a little more compressed, but down here is, like, add a slide. And the kids are like, what? The first time I did it? Now they're like, ah, it's an, you know, it's old hat.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, well, they were kind of surprised. They've never seen it. Well, at least they acted like they hadn't seen it before when I showed them. So, and what was good was that I actually was taking pictures of their sentences. We were working on a Precy, and I was, you know, I took a picture, and then I already had my pre-arranged little things. You know, the main components of each one of these sentences, and then mm-hmm. You know, I'd ask, okay, do we have this part of it? Yes. And then I drag it in place, and then I put an arrow and show where it is and underline stuff. So it really, they really liked it. They, at least it was different than what I've done before, you know, where you have you pull on the cards and you have a student read it out, and then I think it puts them on the spot more. This way I could share student examples anonymously,
yeah,
like we're still, they engage them more because they know it's from the class.
Yeah, they'll know it's theirs, and it kind of pushes them like, oh, I want to be back up there again. You uh-huh. know, I want to be a star. And even at, you know, you teach seniors and what else?
And sophomores.
And sophomores. I mean, even at that age, they want to see, you know, themselves up there. So a couple of things that you mentioned, like, you know, the infrastructure. If they start to increase, like, the number of computers uh-huh. that are available. Uh-huh. If they keep adding more and more,
right.
Say they have, you know, like, a low bandwidth through... I'm sure you guys have Time Warner. You guys right. have to, because, uh-huh. I mean, that's the fastest thing you're going to uh-huh. need to...
Like, right.
They have to keep improving on that side right. also. And I think... Yeah, I know who... I think I know who it is that works for you guys. He's very good, so... Uh-huh. But, you know, if you notice, like, okay, all of a sudden, you know, we have new computers, why is it slowing down? Or, you know, right. at the beginning of the year,
right.
they might be waiting, like, to see, okay, let's have, like, a stress test with everybody running everything.
Right.
Okay, now, uh-huh. you know, we need to expand it this much or add, like, you know, more spots for everybody to connect from.
Right.
But if that's not on point, the kids will get frustrated.
Right.
It's really easy.
You know what? I know that this last year, they went through and they put in all these access points throughout the school. And from what I understand, it's supposed to be built, the support system, I guess. I'm not sure you would call it. The hardware should be there for a fully wired, fully accessible
yeah.
for all students. Because I know even right now, we have two net... I know we have more than two, at least two. We have like the teacher network. We have the other network for the Chromebooks. And then we also have like a public network for students' personal devices that mm-hmm. they also use. So I know they have the bandwidth to support all that. I haven't heard complaints when students... The only issues that we're running into, I think it's more student caused, because They don't wait the minute or two for the Chromebook to connect to the system. Yeah. And they'll go and they'll put it on the student Wi-Fi, the public one. And then, as one of our techs was explaining to me, when you have these two options, the Chromebook will tend to want to switch between the two.
It doesn't know where to connect.
Yeah, but once we fix it on the preferred networks, we haven't had issues. So I know that one of the... Because... We had discussions about this before they actually implemented this. I think they have the mindset where we can't just throw computers at people. We need to be able to actually support the online. I mean, a computer is nothing if it can't access the internet. So I think they're mindful of having the ease and capability and reliability of the. You know, the computers all being able to access online.
Yeah, it's got to have that. Otherwise, I mean, like I said, the kids will get frustrated and all that. The other thing is, like a tech cycle. I mean, hopefully, I mean, it's expensive. I mean, to have, you know, so many Chrome cards.
Right.
And to be, you know, one-to-one. But the longer it takes, or not even longer it takes, as it goes forward, you know, they have to refresh these things. So that's the other part where it could get expensive, you know.
Right.
Do they invest in something, you know, high-end? Will that last longer? Or just, you know what, Chromebooks are like $150.
Right.
Do they just keep buying Chromebooks? Do they wait? But, no, what I'm just saying is...
My question was, I think... When you use Chromebooks, Chromebooks is more of an interface, right? Because most of the things that you're doing, the components are cloud based, right, or internet based, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like an access. But I know there's still issues with having more modern equipment every couple of years.
Right? And I think there's a misconception that you can't run programs or apps on Chromebooks. But if you go to the Chrome store, there's things called extensions, like in my class. Yeah. The kids can run, you know, Lightning Lab for the Spheros, the little robots. And there's a bunch of little, like, programs, you know, they can. But you can't go pop a disk in there or download, you know, like a package for, like, a MacBook and install that program there.
Right.
It would have to be a Chrome extension to be able to do that. So, I mean, that's kind of limited a little bit before you're going to do in the classroom. There's, you know, there's other programs for that.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff is like website based, like they just got to be able to go online to that website for that,
right?
But yeah, I mean, so now that's good. That I like how, you know, you're little by little you're using more and more. But do you feel like there's like a big learning curve for you?
For me, yes. You know what? I think it's something that I will actually be glad that I went through later, because I'm actually figuring things out, helping to figure things out, it trying to iron out some of these kinks, and I think that it's making me a little bit more, I'm not gonna say I'm knowledgeable in that sense, but it makes me kind of able to, I think, troubleshoot things, that issues that come up. Also able to, the one thing I have is a great tech team that I send them questions and they either come and they help me right away or in a timely manner, or they give me answers, you know. So that's one good thing that I do have. But I think that hopefully my tech team and the district will be able to learn things from the trouble that I'm having, so that they don't run into it when they roll these out with other classrooms. So if we have 5 or 6 more Chrome cards next year, let's say, hopefully in a perfect world, we had at least another 5 or 6. They would know, okay, in these classrooms that are going to have them more often, we need to open up their access points or change the settings just like they did to me, so that there's no issues. We need to let them know that whenever there's connectivity issues, it might be the students messing with the preferred networks or whatever other issues, maybe anything that they can learn from me implementing using these, because I thought it was like I got it and all my problems are solved, you know, right when I got it, but there's issues that come up, especially when you're dealing with different companies and whatever. Like with Pearson, there were some issues with, you know, students not being there, for the websites not working well.
Yeah, our online accounts set up.
Yeah, online accounts set up. Students have the passwords that they give us actually being connected to the account. Like I said, we ran our first test where all of us were taking an online test, which may not seem like a big deal, but I mean, to us, it's a big deal. They all logged in. There were a couple issues. Luckily, I had paper copies also for the two students that couldn't log in. But we had students who, I mean, you teach fifth and sixth graders, right? I know even in high school, you'll have one that it's refreshing for 20 minutes before they come and ask and say, yeah. Mr. Huerta, it's been refreshing. I go, well, how long has it been? Oh, 20 minutes. And of course, you can't scream and yell, but say, hey, I mean, after 2 or 3 minutes, you should have come and asked me.
It's like that kid that's just sitting there, you finally get around to walking around, and they're like, oh, I need a pencil. Yeah. And you're like, well, you know, I told everybody to start like 5 minutes ago. Yeah, I need a pencil. And it's like, why didn't you ask me? I don't know. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So has having like all that stuff, have you changed anything else in your classroom? Has the environment changed? Like the seating arrangements, right? How do you have them seated in your classroom?
Well, I always have them in pairs unless I'm testing. I have alternated between, you know, my 10th grade and my AP classes. And if there's a test in one or a test in the other, then the seating arrangements is in testing seating. So I have like a fluid where they move their desks when they come in and move them back when they're done for the testing. I haven't manipulated that yet to where they're in maybe groups, but that's coming up. I know we have a group project coming up, one that I'm gonna have them try to do the
like pods, like four people,
like four people, and all working on the same project, and you know, everybody has a role. So again, that shouldn't be an issue because it's usually Google Slides or Google Docs, and we've worked out the kinks with the connectivity, so that shouldn't be an issue. I'm using the technology mostly in my English 10, so that's the one that's I'm focusing on. English 12 AP, we have our curriculum pretty much set, and we do implement technology in there a few times. And I mean, I'm lucky I have the technology handy there for them.
Yeah, and I think
how about you? I know you have very different types of technology than I do, and you have different because you're teaching multiple subjects.
Yeah.
So you have a lot more options, I think.
Like me, so in the class we have the Kindle Fire tablets. I have three of them that messed up, so I popped them open this weekend and try to fix them. I might have to buy the batteries. The batteries are like $15, but used ones are like $26 from Amazon, and they look like brand new. So I might just end up buying like another one this month, maybe another one next month, because I have my I have three Galaxy S4s, and we use those for the ViewMasters for VR.
Okay.
Which, if you ever wanted to borrow it, you know, you could borrow it, and you could do like little. There's a lot of different apps. One's like Google Expeditions, and you can go and take them, you know, somewhere real world. Mm-hmm. You can use Google Maps. It has a thing called Street View. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look up like
Paris,
Eiffel Tower. Oh. And when you go there, there's a little picture of goggles, and you tap it, and it just looks like two images. But when you put it on, I mean, it's 360 and all that.
Wow.
So we use that in the classroom too. Then we have robots. I have 22 robots. I have invested a lot of money in that, a lot of that myself. The district had a lot of extra robots. They were like, hey, they're, you know, just here, you want them or what? And, I mean, and they're like, we thought about you first. I was like, yeah. So now I can actually pair up my students.
Good.
And actually some be one-on-one, you know, with the robot. And my goal is to try to, you know, have one robot per student. I like to go to different stores, and if they're on clearance, I try to sneak back and try to catch them even cheaper, especially like a Target and stuff. I was able to pick up $50 robots for $15 each.
You told me in the clearance.
Yeah, so instead of $200, I paid $60. And they're tiny, and some of the kids are like, oh, I like these better than the other ones. Because on the bottom, it has like a little visual sensor. So if it's on a black line, it'll go on the black line. And if you put different colors, it's a code. So it can do like a little dance. It'll spin. It'll do a tornado. Uh-huh. It'll go turbo. It'll go real fast. But you can put a lot of different commands, and then you put it on the screen, and it looks like it's, you know, getting programmed by touching the screen, but it starts flashing these lights. Uh-huh. So all those little flashes is coding for the robot. And then you put it down, and you double tap power, and boom, it does what you had programmed it. Well, we have the 3D printer, and we have a Chrome cart. We get half a day. They're trying to get one per class, you know, for the upper grades. For me, I change my scene arrangement probably like once a month. I even had a little project where they designed their own like scene arrangements, and we used like a couple of them. One of them was kind of like two arches, like it was a like a concert. And I mean, I was at the front of the classroom, but it was so different that it wasn't like, oh, it's just rows, you know, the traditional thing.
Right.
Right now, I'm back with the original one that we started with, which is like a horseshoe, you know, like a U. Uh-huh. And in the middle, I have all my couches and pillows and stuff. I have a little recliner. Mm-hmm. And they know now, at first it was kind of hard for them because they would talk to other people in other groups. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, like 12 students on one side, 12 on another, and then two little groups in the middle. Mm-hmm. And the two little groups in the middle that make like the U part, I mean, they're their own groups. But every four people, the two facing each other and then the next two facing each other, those four, they know they're a group. When I say work with somebody near you, you know, I have my option of those three. Right. I shouldn't like look around this person and talk to my buddy and all that. But when they have like free time, a lot of them gravitate towards certain things. Like some are like, oh, can I use the VR goggles? And really, I wish I have like 16 goggles. I just don't have 16 smartphones.
I get it.
And they're like $80 each.
And it has to be
It has to have a certain type of a sensor, an accelerometer and a gyroscope. Otherwise, it'll just look forward and it won't sense when you turn side to side.
So which phones have that?
The lowest phones that are decent is a Galaxy S4, not the S4 Mini.
S4 or higher?
S4 or higher.
And the 4S. How about iPhone?
4S.
4S or higher.
You can kind of get the other ones to work, but then you're like messing with a lot of stuff. I'd rather just pay an extra like 10, 15 bucks because of price difference. Right. And I mean, I've tried to get it funded different ways. There's a website, donorschoose.org. Right. That's how I got my printer. That's how I got my tablets. That's how I got some of my robots. Right. Right now I have a campaign where I'm trying to get... I think it's three or four, I can't remember, more 3D printers. Because when I have a student use a 3D printer, sometimes they can't print the size of the actual size of the item.
Right.
Because I'm trying to restrict it to like an hour. So right. I have to like bring down the size and the scale of it.
Right.
Because then nobody's going to print.
Right.
And even at 1 hour, you know, it's not enough. And they're good. They know how to make stuff. They know how to manipulate stuff, how to design stuff. And if I can get more printers, then we'll always...
How much is the printer that you have in there? What's that?
My printer that I have is a... it's a FlashForge Creator Pro. That's what it is. It's, mm-hmm. It has two nozzles, two extruders. That's like a... Right now, they're probably like $1,000. The ones that I want to get are $300. They're at Barnes & Noble. So, yeah, if...
Do they have on Amazon, too?
They have that same one. The cheapest I can find is, like, $300. And that one, I've seen some of the...
Is it cheapest at Barnes & Noble, or is
it
cheaper on Amazon?
I'm ordering it through Amazon if it gets, you know, funded.
Okay.
Maybe over the summer, you know, I'll try to, you know, find some money somewhere and maybe buy another one. I mean, I know, you know, we want to invest, like, oh, let me buy some borders and buy some posters and all that. But for me, I try not to spend like actual price, like, you know, full price, retail price. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to, you know, I'm cheap, dude. You know me. I mean, I always try to find a good deal. Like, there's these robots that are usually $150, Dash and Dot. Just one of them, Dash, he's $150. But I'm looking because I think I'm able to find like two or three of them for $50 each. Mm-hmm. I'll spend $150 because I'm saving myself, you know, $300. Right. If I can. But like, I'm not gonna say, oh god, I can't imagine teaching without any of this stuff. But yeah, I mean, I can teach without it, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've had to before. It's not like I you know, got into the fetal position. Oh my God, my Chromebook doesn't work, or my MacBook, and what am I going to do? No, I mean, I'll make copies of papers, and that's usually what I leave for the subs. I know how to do that. But, like, my students, you know, they're like, oh, so we go to Google Classroom? Yeah. Which classroom? Technology one. And you'll see the assignment at the top. Okay. And they get started. And then I have my, you know, students that are like, I don't get it. Did you read all the instructions? Where are the instructions? See the title underneath? Oh, okay. Or they'll have a part next to them. Oh, I can show them. And with technology, you get more of that. Like, oh, I can show them. I can help them fix that. Uh-huh. Let me help them. And I'm like, okay. You know, it's not like, hey, I got them out of my hair. But now I can go and facilitate and actually walk around and monitor.
And go help the ones that really, really need that.
They really need help, or, you know, guide them. Okay, like, this is good. Let me ask a question that I hope will put this idea in their head to try the suggestion or whatever. So, but no, that's good. That's good that you're doing that. So keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And right now, let's switch up a little bit. Let's talk about testing and test scores. So, Adam, like right now, we just had progress reports in our, you know, in my school, and we had a benchmark test. My students did all right. They could have done better, but it, you know, we were talking earlier before we started recording. We were talking about, you know, oh, how's everything going on at your school and yours, and it's, there's not a focus on like teaching to the test. I mean, there's a lot of focus towards, you know, test scores, how the kid's doing, you know, who's, you know, at standard and who's not. But we were talking earlier and, you know, we use that phrase, you know, teaching to the test. Like me, you know, I hear it and I think right away people hear teaching to the test and they're like, oh, you know, it's negative and, you know, you're not doing your job. But I don't want to say like, oh, you know, I give my students the test that they're going to take. I mean, I use it and I say, okay, so I need similar problems, especially when I'm dealing with, you know, students that are ELs.
Right.
One of the big things that we do, my grade level, is we look for words that are going to throw off our ELs. Because at the school I'm at, there's a lot of them. I have a lot of them in my classroom. Uh-huh. You know, that English is not their first language. And sometimes there's sayings or there's words that I'm like, I haven't used that word in a long time and I'm a professional. How is this child supposed to know this word, you know?
Right.
And just, I mean, you teach English.
Well, there's two schools of thinking. Okay, so the issue, especially now that you bring up ELs, the issue that you have with assessments and different populations of students, is, especially ELs, is every test they take in part becomes a reading test. And that's not really a fair assessment, right? I mean, you want to assess the skills that they have, you know, and their aptitude for those skills. So teaching to the test to me has always meant that you look at the test and you see the types of skills that they're supposed to have.
Yeah.
Because it would be unfair. You always need to teach the test, meaning you need to assess what you taught. You know, my son has a funny saying, you know, that where he's looking at some of the, he was looking at some of these math Common Core questions where he says, well, Billy has three apples and Johnny has two oranges. Calculate the surface of the sun.
That's there's a meme like that. Yeah.
Right, there's a meme like that. So, you want to teach certain skills and then you want to assess those skills. So you are always, in fairness to the students, teaching to the test in a way. You don't want to give them, teach to the test in a way where you're giving them an advantage over what's going to be on the test, but you definitely want to teach them the skills so you can assess what you taught, right? You can't assess them for things you didn't teach, right?
Yeah.
The only place where that applies is if you're giving them like a pre-test or you're assessing when they're coming in, what skills they already have, then you may give them a very general test that it assesses many different skills to see where they're at. But there's two schools of thinking where, for example, and it's debatable, I think, either side, you know, you give them a test especially English learners or lower level students, and you adjust certain things so that you are assessing the skills. And I agree with that. In my opinion, I think that you don't want to just be testing the skill in addition to the reading, right? But there even then there has to be a level of competency, right? Because you're testing, let's just say you're testing a certain skill and you're bringing down some of these very difficult vocabulary words or even certain idioms that they may not be familiar with or concepts they may not be familiar with to test that skill. But even then, how low do you go? Especially in English, right? How low do you go? Do you just bring the vocabulary down to where, it's so low that it's not really an assessment anymore? You understand? Like, one issue that I have is I sometimes have students that come in and they have a third or fourth or even fifth grade reading level, and you wonder.
You're talking about 10th graders.
Yes, you're talking about nine. Especially when I used to teach freshmen and sophomores, and they would have a very low, and you're like, how did they get to this grade level if they only have a fifth or a fourth grade reading level? But I mean, the way our system is now, I mean, it's possible to do that, right? So do I really want to take this test, a ninth grade test, and bring it down to a fourth grade reading level just so I can assess them? Because honestly, that should be what every single student gets. There's a test at their reading level so I can assess only the skills that we're assessing. But I don't think that's reality based, right? And especially now with Common Core, there's more of a resistance to that. Even me, I'm trying to think, I can't do that, because if I think about this, if you do that for a student and you're assessing these skills, and no, I'm going to give them a fair chance at this test, so I'm going to bring down these vocabulary words that I know they won't know and put them in terms that they'll give them access to the test, and they test on the skills and they're doing well with that, and you know, whatever it is you're trying to assess, it gives you a true and accurate reading, then what happens? Then they go on to either the next level or to a Common Core assessment where they don't have any of that scaffolding, any of those different steps you took. Now they're going to be reading a test at a level that they are unprepared for, because you've been kind of
supporting
giving them a crutch, yeah. Giving them support, which is the right thing to do. But now they're in 11th grade taking the CASP, and they 90% of the language that's in there, it's got to be, I think, at least a ninth grade level now, right? And what do they do? They fail miserably, or they get discouraged and they don't even try. So it's a very complicated issue, at least as far as English. Math, I think, might have a different point of view, because it's more straight towards the skills, each one of the, unless you're doing word problems, in which case the language might be an issue, but I think it's more straightforward as far as assessing the skills that you want to assess. So I understand both sides. I understand how you would want to scaffold your test and your language to assess what you're actually want to assess, what you really want to test for, but I also see the reasoning to not doing that, or doing it at first, but pulling that back very dramatically or drastically as you're going through the year, because you don't want them to go into a formal test or a district test or a state test where they don't have that support, they don't have that means to help them, you know, you understand? They don't have that crutch.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay, so you meant, you know, those people that are listening, if they don't know, I mean, you teach 10th and 12th grade English. I teach 5th grade, so I teach everything. For me, especially with the technology part, I present in different ways. I'll use animations. I've used green screen. I've used PowerPoint presentation, right. Slideshow presentation. But I teach them how to make those things also. And for some of them, they can show me their level of understanding with a presentation. It's easier for them to speak publicly than to sit down and type, you know, here, type a 5-paragraph essay. For some moments, it's impossible because they can't get the words from here, from their head to the paper. or to the keyboard. I think the hard part for you is that you have that one subject that they can't show you in a different way.
Right.
They can only show you that way. Because if they're in their science class and, you know, their teacher's like, well, you know, you have a couple options. You know, you can show me an experiment, you know, show it and demo it in front of the class and then explain your, you know, your reasoning. Or you can do research paper and type it up and, you know, make sure you show all your sources. Or you can record a video or, you know, they have options. And the teacher will say, okay, you know what, my EL or my student that, you know, is low in English, not a good public speaker or whatever, they have these different avenues where they can show me the science teacher or the math teacher or the art, you know, whatever class it is, that that I understand what's going on in the class. So they can find a different way to assess and check for understanding and then say, okay, so this person is understanding science. And I have some students that they're high in math, they understand science, but their reading and writing is low. For you, there's no other option for them to show you that they know how to write proper,
right?
That their reading level is high, that they understand, you know, proper grammar, what's a run-on sentence. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to actually show you run-on sentence.
Right.
And that's the hard part because, you know, like you said, you're working with them,
right?
Which is what you're supposed to do. I'm sure there's a lot of teachers that are like, you know what, it's black or white. You either get it or don't. You're going to get an F or whatever.
I think you're also in a unique perspective because you still see the connection between English and all the other subjects.
Yeah.
So I think it's more difficult for me, at least in my experience. Like, if you taught math at high school and I told you, you need to get them to write a few paragraphs. And then when they, if they need help, you need to kind of tell them what they're doing wrong. And usually a teacher from another subject's response will be, not all teachers.
Yeah.
Let me say that before that. But most teachers will say, well, that's an English teacher's job. But I agree. That is my job. Absolutely. 100%. That is my job. However, if a student is having issues reading your content or expressing themselves effectively in your content, then you need to help them also. And a lot of people don't see that. If English is going to be the weakest link in our demographics, right? English is going to be the weakest link because we have, you know, such a high English learner population.
Yeah, just, I mean, English we're in, just so people know, I mean, we're in Southern California. We're like 15 minutes away from the border. Uh-huh. We have a lot of students that cross over, especially to the high school.
Right.
Me, I live in a town that's, you know, 20 minutes north of, you know, where we live. I teach in a different town.
Okay.
But, you know, my brother has mentioned before, you know, that he has students that, you know, come from Mexicali, which is in Mexico. They cross over every day because the parents want them to come here or they don't have another option and so on. So,
But even, I mean, that's not the problem. The problem is that
people understand a lot of...
Yeah, you know. And I'm sure that every city has their demographic or their certain percentage of students who are English learners. And it may not be Spanish, English. It may be, you know, Mandarin or Japanese or Canadian.
I'm kidding.
Of course. But if the language is the weak link, all teachers need to make an effort to try and strengthen that and correct that. And I know the heavy burden should fall on the English teacher, but the English teacher only sees a student for like an hour a day. And if that's if that's going to affect their success in all content, because it will. If language is an issue, it does affect every single content area. It's the foundation of their learning in this country. So, I mean...
So I have a good question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
So then, if they don't pass, you know, you guys give the SBAC also? What do you guys give?
We give the CASP at during 11th grade. We don't give the KC anymore.
Is that now the CASP?
Like, yes, that's for juniors. It used to be sophomores. It used to be 10th graders. Now it's 11th graders.
Okay, because we have CST. Now we have SBAC.
Uh-huh.
Right now it's English and math.
Uh-huh.
Next generation science standards are coming pretty soon. So then we're going to have the same thing with that. But my question is this. So if they don't do well on those tests, are they a success to you or not?
You know,
what is successful?
Success for me is a student who is able to learn. It doesn't sound the way I mean it to be, but a student who learns on their own. So when you give students the skills to where they need to, if they have a problem, they can do their own research, they can figure out, especially now with such, easily accessible information, that they can find their own answers, make their own judgments. But for me, a success for a 10th grade student would be somebody who has the knowledge of the content, is at a 10th grade reading level, can express themselves efficiently in English, and also has a digital, knowledge enough to also put those ideas into an electronic format or an electronic media. That would be success. If they do well on the CASP, most teachers that I know, and most administrations that I know, they have different value on data, which really testing, that's all it is. Testing, if you test a student on a Tuesday and on a Friday, you'll probably get different results. You test them in the morning or you test them in the Friday afternoon, it's probably different results. If they're having a good day, they're having a bad day, different results. Two separate students, same test. Some people take tests very well. Some people do very well. Some people don't on tests.
Yeah.
Stress, whether it's little stress or a lot of stress, it affects their performance. So I don't put too much value on tests, assessments. Especially the more formal they are, I think the less faith I have in them. But I do realize that states and government and schools and districts, they have this need for data. As a teacher, though, I would put the need for that data, below using that time to teach. And if we could teach and use the time efficiently that we put away for assessing all the time, I think it'd be time better spent. But I mean, that's just one English teacher's opinion. But again, how do we show accountability? How do we show students are learning? I see the need for assessments. I do, but I just think that there's better ways to assess than what we currently have.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, success for me, I understand the importance of the test also. I understand the importance of, a real quick, informal assessment, on the fly before I move on to the next leg of my teaching, and then checking again, did it, stick? Did it, are they able to retain it? But, I mean, we've talked about it before. I mean, there's so many factors. I mean, you're talking about a person, Tomorrow, I might be able to teach, awesome. The next day, I might not because I feel sick. But I got to show up. I don't want to call in sick. There's a meeting I can't miss. So I might as well just go and be in the classroom and see what I can do.
Right.
Am I having problems at home? Did I have enough to eat for breakfast? Did I find out something about one of my students that, really got to me and now I'm bummed out for the rest of the day? Did one of my students leave all of a sudden over the weekend? That's happened to me already before, twice. Mm-hmm. And the student doesn't say anything. They just, they're gone, And that's just me. I'm an adult, but, I'm already old enough where, certain things I can, put them away. Let me be professional. Let me focus on teaching. But you're talking about a child, even, 10th and 12th grade. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about people that emotionally, they haven't, matured. And not that they can't handle certain things or that they act, foolish or childish, but, certain things are going to be a kick in the gut all the time to them. Mm-hmm. Every time that mom leaves, every time that dad leaves, some of them, it might be that dad has a job where he has to travel all the time. Other times it might be that dad leaves because there's problems at home and they're not capable, because they haven't, reached adulthood. Once you reach adulthood, you should be able to handle the things better,
right.
But they can't leave that stuff at the door. And then they come, to an area where they might not feel safe. they might come into a school ground where, you know, every day they get picked on. And at home it sucks too, you know? So I try to have an environment that's welcoming, because I don't want my students to feel like, oh, home sucks, out here in the playground it sucks, lunchtime it sucks, and my teacher sucks, you know? I have some students that sometimes, you know, I need to be a little tougher on, even if they know that they're having, you know, a rough time. And I don't mean tougher like, oh, I'm going to yell at them. No, I have to push them harder, because if I don't, it's going to develop into something that the teacher the following year is going to have a hard time with, or I'm going to have a hard time with at the end of the year.
Right.
And it could become an issue that, I mean, I might not be the one to get rid of that, you know,
right,
that aspect of their personality, but I mean, it could become something bad that later on affects how they learn, affects them keeping a job, affects them, you know, having a relationship. What if they have kids? Right. Then they, you know, continue with that. And I know that's like a deep, long way of looking at things. But I think if I just right. look at it like, okay, this person's in my classroom, see you later, I'll never see you again, then I should not be teaching, because the truth is that these people, my year can make or break them going towards, you know, right. sixth grade.
Right.
Seventh and eighth grade are formative years. Right. I mean, those right. are years, not just education-wise. I mean, if and you mentioned, you know, data. This child is not data. This child is a person. You know, if our significant others just looked at us like information, like, well, how much are you bringing home? Oh, that's enough. I love you. We'd be like, damn, you know, and it's a number. And right. if we look at a student like, well, what number did you get? Yeah, you suck.
Right.
It's like, and I mean, we send these things home to parents and like, hey, guess what? You know, you see this red part? Your kid's right in the middle of it.
Right.
What's a parent gonna think? They're gonna hide that from the child, or might even throw in their face, why did you get such a bad test score?
Right.
You know, and crush them. And I'm not saying, you know, don't need to pat on the butt and all that, but, you know, that example I used right now, like, if they did that to us, how little would we feel? How tired of it would we get? And I mean, not saying like, okay, let's leave our significant others, our wives, but if something like that kept happening, like, you know, there's no real focus on who am I,
right?
Just this number. You know, we as adults, okay, well, I have an option. You know, I could leave. It's going to suck for me, and if I have kids and all that. But you're talking about a child that has nowhere to go except to the house that sucks, to the classroom that sucks, and to these people that only focus on them. They don't care about the name. What's your ID number? What'd you get on this score? Okay. You're labeling EL. You're labeled this. You know, you have an IEP. Like, who are you? Each of my students in my class, I mean, it's hard for you because I know you have like 100 and something. How many students do you have?
120.
That's a lot. I have 33. I went beyond my max.
I think 130.
I can tell you some stuff about each of them. Like, you know, their personalities and stuff. Uh-huh. Some stuff that's going on with them. But I know that, you know, I've known teachers, my son's had teachers that they're just like, come in, nobody talks,
right?
You get this done, then you stay quiet, you get this done, do it on your own, only listen to my voice for, you know, 6 hours.
Sit Joe, shut Joe.
Yeah. You know,
and you know what's funny, that we've all had that, right? Try to think of the last in-service or professional development day, right, where you go and you sit down and they talk at you for 30 minutes, then you go to another place, somebody else talks at you, and then you go somewhere. That's like our students. They go from class to class to class, and I mean, it gets monotonous, it gets boring. And
if we get, you know, I mean, I'm lucky because right now where I'm at, I have a good academic coach. She's awesome. Mm-hmm. She goes way out of her way to make stuff interesting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she has stuff that, I'm sorry, it's not interesting. And she tries to like spruce it up. But I have been to trainings that I'm like, wow, create a window so I can jump out of it mm-hmm. right now. And I understand, you know, that the money is being spent on that. But, you know, if I can't handle that.
Right.
And again, I'm an adult. And put my emotions in check. And here's a kid, 10 years old, 11 years old, might be hyper, might not be hyper. Might be attentive, is attentive. But one thing, I mean, they're kids. They might not understand, why is this important? This is boring. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, I don't care about this. So, I mean, I can't look at them and just say, how'd you do on tests? When they finish, they saw their test scores and they're like, oh. And I'm like, it's okay, you know. And I would just tell them, there's your test score, and I would move on. Because I didn't want to be like, there's your test score. That's an F, by the way.
Yeah.
They already know. I don't need to tell them. And some of those students would go, oh, you know, is this going to affect my grade? And I reminded them beforehand, you know, this is just like a practice test to kind of gauge where we're at as a district, you know, what's working, what's not working. I tell them, no, don't worry. What about the one at the end of the year? Don't worry. Only tests that matter are mine for your grades. But what about this? I go, well, you know, we want you to get smarter and, you know, this will affect like the classes you take in the high school. And I think maybe in junior high, you might have to take an extra, you know, English class or math class, depending right. on where you score. I go, but you know, with me, it's not going to do that. And yeah, I mean, that's the best way I could put it to an adult that maybe doesn't understand teaching or even to other teachers, you know, I understand the need for like data and I need this number. Like what did they get? What rank? What percentile?
Right.
But you know, why am I not that, why do I care? But it's like, okay, if they can't read and I push reading on them and I tell the parents, hey, child needs to read. Child doesn't read on their own. Parents don't push them. Reading level doesn't go up. I don't want to sound like cruel or like, well, you know, not my problem, but it's not my problem anymore. I'm doing the best that I can, and I have 33 of these, right. you know, kids. But when they're with me, I try to introduce ideas and concepts and things like that that I know they're not going to see at home because the school I teach at, it's very low, you know, on the economic level. Some are not going to have access to this stuff. Some of them will not be introduced to some of this stuff. And I have kids. I have one kid that she wants to study architecture already. She's a fifth grader. I have a kid that wants to get a doctorate, he said, in robotic engineering. And that's just two of them. The rest, I don't know. But some are interested in being teachers. Some are interested in this and that. And thank you. Sorry, I needed some water. To hear that from a parent, say, hey, you know what, can you help me find software for my daughter? She wants to do this. Or from another parent, say, hey, you know what, he wants to be this already. I understand. I'm not like, you know, dreaming here saying, oh, yay, they can go magically put on a hat and be an architect or an engineer or start designing robotics, working on chips and all that. I know there's a lot more, but now these kids that are so young, they have a goal that they're aiming towards. The parents are like, my kid knows what they want. Now I know which direction to aim them at. I don't want to say I'm taking credit for that, but I was like, wow, I was proud of myself. And they're both very smart students. Okay, they just happen to be smart. But I didn't run and say, well, you know, your child is ranked this and that on, you know, no. They have drive now. Now they have a goal. And I don't want, you know, my students to end up, I don't want to ever end up teaching like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just being like, well, what'd they score? No. For me, if I just stay in the same place, I get bored. So I always have to find new stuff, like that little app I showed you earlier mm-hmm. with the little, you draw the mouth and it starts talking.
Yeah.
I'm like, how can I use that in class? How can I hack these tablets that might not be able to download it from this store? How can I hack them and install them on there? Which I've done before. And I showed the students how to take a file, how to run it, and install it. And they're like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Yeah, you just learned how. So that's why I was like, okay, well, let's talk about test scores. Because, I mean, yeah, checking for understanding, totally important. Test scores? Yeah, they are. But I don't think it's the end all.
Right.
For everything. And yeah, I think some people are super focused on it. When you know, we're at a time where it's getting, like, if someone wants to design something, they don't need coding anymore. To make it, like, their own, they might need to. But you have people that can design things, people that are making money using their 3D printers, doing all these other things. I mean, people that make podcasts, they live off of the podcasts. Mm. Or they have a YouTube channel, they live off a YouTube channel. To be famous before, you had to go to Hollywood.
Right.
Now, it's in your bedroom. You have a good idea. You do a little bit of work. And you follow through. And I think that whole idea of, like, okay, it always has to be about the test score.
Right.
That, to me, I think eventually should phase out, but I don't know if it will.
Right.
Because, I mean, look at how things have changed.
Right.
But we don't want to change how education is done.
Right, right, right. And I see what you're saying, and you know, but then, you know, this could be a topic for maybe next podcast, but, you know, it goes from the assessment to grades, right? How are grades affecting our students, right? Yeah. How are grades reflective of students? Are they a true reflection of what they do, you know? So I understand how what you're saying about assessment not being the end-all, be-all, the be-all, end-all of what a student is worth. And I don't think that's ever been the case. I know that the reason that school districts need that is to see trends and achievement levels and you know, using that for funding and other things. I mean, it's I understand there's a complicated necessity for data, but I think you and I both agree that our students are people first, they're children first, they're important first before their test scores, right? And even their grades, you know, our students, a lot of times, you know, the best thing you can do for a student is just make that connection with them, just be there for them. And, you know, the many roles that teachers play, maybe that would be also another good thing to talk about, is the role of a teacher. What is a teacher, and what should a teacher be to a student, you know? So I agree with you that, I think test scores, they're a necessary evil, you know, but they're here to stay, and they might get even more, you know, not say prevalent in the days to come. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like right now, that's something we're focusing on where I'm at, and I understand why. I mean, we need to show that this level of thinking, you know, our kids have it.
Right.
But like we mentioned earlier, if I have a few different ways for my students to show me their level of understanding, why can't we have different ways of assessing them to show their understanding?
Right.
And I think that we have like one option. Right. It's like...
Right. More like an open-ended type of assessment where you know, say, you know, here's this topic, you show me what you know and how can you show that, instead of like, what's the answer to this question? What's the answer to this question? There's got to be better ways. But again, that goes back into how time-consuming, how much money can go into it. Is it a true assessment? I mean, there's just so many little things that go into it that it's definitely way too much to try and, you know, work out in one single podcast. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so that's our episode for this week. My name is Jesus Huerta. I'm at JesusH1979 on Twitter, and I teach in Brawley.
And again, thanks for listening. This is Adan. I'm Mr. Huerta SHS at Twitter. And on Twitter?
On Twitter, there you go. Inside of Twitter?
On the Twitter.
So yeah, we will keep trying to do this once a week. I think we have our new little spot right here, little office area in his brand new house, which is nice and cozy. Way better than my garage, which was cold and loud.
I don't know. There was something about it, though, that was, you know...
It was underground. That's why it was underground.
Unnerving.
Okay. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.